I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had a one long horn and one big eye. I commenced to shaking and I said, ooh-wee. It looked like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me. Well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff.
All right, and on the other end of our line this morning is an author from Kansas City, Missouri, Rochelle Wisoff Fields. Good morning, Rochelle. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. How's life in Kansas City?
A little bit on the chilly side,
okay.
But life is good.
Now, it gets pretty hot there during the summer, right?
Yeah, we have extremes. We can go anywhere from sub-degree in the winter to triple digits in the summer.
Well, that keeps you on your toes. You never know what you're going to wear that morning when you get up.
That's true. Well, you've heard the expression, if you don't like the weather here, Wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of the same up here in Detroit. It will change fairly often. So I guess those who like variety, Kansas City is a good place to live.
Right.
All right. I'm looking at your website, your blog website, RochelleWisoff.com. And you have a caption near the beginning that says, growing older is inevitable. Growing up is optional. And I have to tell you, I laughed out loud when I read that to myself earlier this morning. So that's great. I love that philosophy.
That's been my philosophy for most of my adult life.
I told you off air, I enjoyed being 12 so much, I decided, doggone it, I'm going to stay 12 the rest of my life, no matter what anybody says. So I've had a good time.
I feel that way about 18.
That's right, yeah. Do you remember the comic strip, The Lockhorns?
I can't say that I do.
It was a husband and wife, and they were always feuding about something, but it was humorous at the same time. And I don't know what the husband was doing. He was in the background of the caption, fooling around, acting silly. And the wife was telling a friend, I don't know if my husband had a happy childhood, but he has certainly had a long one. So that's a good philosophy, too. So growing up is optional.
My husband might say that about me.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. If you don't have fun, you know, there's no point, you just got to have fun in life, right?
I totally agree.
All right. Well, you've written a number of books, and as I understand, you put together a trilogy, and all three books are available now. Why don't you just take us through each book and give us a synopsis and kind of tell us what these are all about?
Okay. My publisher refers to them as the Hava Gitterman trilogy, and they do center around Hava Cohen Gitterman, mm-hmm. who is a rabbi's daughter. And I also refer to the trilogy as The Dark Side of Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
It starts out in 1899. With Hava losing her family in a massacre by the Cossack, was pretty common in Eastern Europe. If you're familiar with Russia's Tale of Settlement, which was a Jewish ghetto. So Hava is in a little village in that Tale of Settlement where the most dangerous thing in the world was being Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So she escapes from her village. She runs from the burning village to another one where she's taken in by the cantor and his wife. She falls in love with the rabbi's son who is promised to someone else. So a little like Fiddler on the Roof, only there's a lot of graphic violence, mm-hmm. bloodshed, mm-hmm. and romance to keep it interesting.
Right. You got to have romance in there. That keeps people interested, right? These based on stories that you knew? Did you do research on this coming from family stories? Or how did you get involved in this whole line of storytelling to begin with?
My grandfather, I knew, had survived the pogroms. He had come from Poland at the turn of the century, taught himself to be a tailor. So I've always been interested in that part of history, but didn't really know that much about my family. So I did a lot of research. The internet is a great place for research. Mm-hmm. Google is my friend. I would start with one thread and end up finding more than I bargained for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jewish Virtual Library was another great site. Jewish Gen kind of kept me current on when the Jewish holidays were during that time. So But I digress. I didn't leave Hava in the midst of all of this horror. She does survive, kind of a spoiler, but she does survive the Kishinev pogrom in the first book and immigrates to America, specifically ends up with her husband's family in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, that first book before we go on is Please Say Kaddish for Me.
Right, very okay. Good.
Thank you. I'm picking up the Jewish lingo as we go along here.
Right.
Your second book from Silt and Ashes, that's where we are right now, so take it from there.
Okay, and that book kicks up in 1904 in Kansas City, where Hava is living with her husband and his family. From Silt and Ashes goes from 1904 to 1905. Now, in Please Say Kaddish for Me, I have a lot of characters. I have people say, oh, I had trouble keeping them all straight. I'm sorry. That's where this writer went. I myself like books with a lot of characters,
mm-hmm.
and so I write that way.
Okay.
So some of Hava's family and friends have immigrated to London. Another part of their family has immigrated to Odessa, Ukraine, where in 1905 there was another horrific pogrom. And so I kind of take you through that part of European, Eastern European history.
Okay. Now they ended up in America, you said, and basically if they had stayed where they were, they eventually would have been killed. At least that was the theory back then. So they came to America. But it wasn't necessarily a whole lot better here at the time, right?
No, they do experience a lot of bigotry, mm-hmm. which, you know, I understand that my family did. I can remember my mother telling me that even in the 50s, my father was denied jobs because he was Jewish.
Wow.
I don't get it.
No, I don't either.
But anyway, so Hava and her family are in Kansas City, and ultimately the story ends up in From Silt and Ashes in Kansas City. And I don't want to tell too much.
No, no.
Yeah, of course, I want people to read them.
That's right. Don't give it away. but we kind of get the gist of what's going on here. And then you got into your third book in the trilogy, As One Must, One Can. So where do we end up in that book?
Okay, we are beginning in Kansas City. It deals more with the post-traumatic stress that many of my characters had experienced. You know, they didn't call it post-traumatic stress in those days. They must have. And I look at my grandfather, and I never asked him the questions that I wish now that I had.
Right.
I suspect there was some post-traumatic stress there. He was not a warm, open, friendly kind of person. And I wonder, in retrospect, how much had to do with that probably violent childhood that he had.
Oh, yeah, I would say a significant part of it was attributed directly to that.
Someone asked me one time why I end up in Kansas City as opposed to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I answered, well, New York Jew is a bit of a cliche, although it is where my father was from.
Okay.
Very valid question, but I think In present day, we tend to think Jew, you know, oh, you must have come from New York.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what the percentage is. I remember reading about this years ago, but those of Jewish heritage hold a huge percentage in terms of success in various fields, you know, science, medicine, music, art, and I mean, the list goes on and on. You know, based upon their population, the percentage of success is far surpasses the percentage of the population that they make up.
It is interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Bible does say they're God's chosen people, so that could have something to do with it.
I truly believe it does.
Yeah. Generally, when God chooses you, things turn out well.
Yeah, although as Tevye said, once in a while could you choose someone else?
I remember that. I saw that play. Not only did I see a professional play, but my son was in that during his high school years. And we got to know
what
that play. Oh, he played Tevye.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh,
he got
I love that.
He was hoping for a minor role when he called me at work and said, well, things didn't work out. I didn't get a part. And I said, you know, it's too bad. And he'll try it again next year. He goes, I'm just kidding. I got a part. and it's Tevye. And I said, okay, now seriously, you know, what did you get? He goes, no, I am being serious now. So he got the part of Tevye, and we together learned the play inside and out, the history of it, and you know, went back in time and researched the Jews in Russia and all that good stuff. And well, what an awful, depressing play, at least at the end. I mean, you felt yourself near tears in the audience, just what these people had to go through.
Oh, I am selfish in tears when I see that.
Yeah.
And I was accused by one friend. He says, you know, all your characters sound like they came out of Fiddler on the Roof. I said, of course they do. What you have to understand, that's where my family came from. I grew up hearing the speech pattern.
Yeah.
And not unusual.
No, your heritage is what it is. And, you know, if your characters speak like you, that's probably 90% of the writers, right? If not more.
You know, when we talk about Fiddler on the Roof, before that play came out in the 60s, I had read the Sholem Aleichem story that play is based on. So when that came out, I was already familiar with Tevye and his daughters.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's always been a fascination of mine. So to be able to write these novels and ultimately get them published has just been one of my greatest joys.
Yeah, no, I believe that. We just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Dr. Paul's Family Talk on Impact Radio USA. And this morning we're talking to Rochelle Wisoff Fields, who's written a trilogy about, I guess we can say it's about your Jewish heritage, or at least what your grandparents might have gone through back when, before they came over here. Is that a good way to put it?
That's an excellent way to put it.
All right. And you've written this trilogy, and if people want to get a hold of that today, and they want to buy all three books, how would they do that?
They are available on Amazon.com, and they're also available on BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay.
So they can be ordered through Barnes & Noble.
Okay. And your last name is hyphenated, Wisoff Fields, W-I-S-O-F-F, hyphen, and then Fields. Is that right?
Right.
All right. So we encourage everybody to check out that today, either on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or both, and check out Rochelle Wisoff Fields in all the books she's written. Now, you mentioned, when we were talking a little bit off air, you have a fourth book that you're working on right now. What's that all about?
The book is, the working title on that is A Stone for the Journey. Mm-hmm. And it is going to be a compilation of illustrations, short stories, excerpts from these three novels.
Okay.
For those who would rather look at pictures than read the book, mm-hmm. This book is for you.
There's a little interesting twist on this book, though. You actually, yourself, did all the illustrations, correct?
I did.
Yeah.
It came about, covers on my books were all original artwork. My agent had suggested that I put character studies up on my blog to garner interest in the book. The publisher saw the paintings, and he said, would you be interested in doing a coffee table companion book?
Wow.
To which I said, let me think about it a minute, yes.
That's one of those quick yeses in life, absolutely. And so you did all all of the sketches, and everything in this book is produced by you.
Absolutely. It is a culmination of a childhood dream.
And the dream being what? Writing as well as...
Well, actually, I wanted to be an artist before I discovered that I was also a writer.
Okay. That was your initial schooling, right? You went to school to be an artist?
I did. I went to the Kansas City Art Institute.
Yeah.
And continued with art in spite of that.
Yeah, I I told you off air, I have absolutely, and I really can't stress the word absolutely enough, but absolutely zero art skills. But when I was getting my first degree in music, to get from the music building to my car on a cold day, I would walk through the art building, and I thought, man, this place is amazing. These people are creating all kinds of stuff out of clay and sculpture and paintings, and you'd think I would have picked up something, even by osmosis, but absolutely not. So I admire anybody who can draw or paint or any form of visual arts.
Well, and then I admire the musicians. If I were going to play an instrument, it would be violin.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of characters who are violinists. And a child prodigy in two of the books who plays piano, even though she is blind, she is a virtuoso.
Oh, yeah, that can happen. It happens a lot, in fact.
Yeah, so I had fun writing about music.
All
and
right.
listening to the pieces that they play in the book. So if nothing else, I could describe it. If you're familiar with, I'm sure you are, Chopin's Nocturne in C-sharp minor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I fell in love with when I saw The Pianist, is almost a character in these three books.
Oh, okay. All right, well, very good. What is the name of the book again, the one you're coming out with all the sketches?
A Stone for the Journey.
Stone for the Journey, and when do you think that will be out? Do you have a prediction yet?
We're shooting for February of 2018. Might be a little bit later, but I'm working hard on it right now.
Okay, and that is to serve as a coffee table / companion book to your three books in your trilogy?
Yes.
All right. Well, very good. When that comes out, let us know, and we'll get you back on and tell people all about that. But in the meantime, we want everyone to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and check out Rochelle Wisoff Fields and look at all of her work. I think you'll be very impressed. Now, looking through your website, which do you want to give your website now, and we'll give it again toward the end of the show?
Okay. The actual URL is www.rochellewisoff.com, all one word. Or you can Google Addicted to Purple, and you'll find me.
Okay. We'll get into that Addicted to Purple thing in just a minute. I kind of like it. But you run, I guess for lack of a better term, some kind of a contest or a motivational deal every week called Friday Fictioners, where you post a picture and you give people 100 words to tell the story from beginning to end. Why don't you just take us through that? What's Friday Fictioners all about?
Okay, it's Friday Fictioneers, and I've been facilitating this blog challenge now for 5 years. I came into it as one of the gang in 2012, and Madison Woods, who was the creator of it, decided to move on to other things. And I begged to take it on because of what it's done for my writing. Even my husband says some of the 100-word stories were some of my best writing.
Oh, wow.
But what I do is I post a photo prompt that many of my participants will send me, and we'll post a prompt on Wednesday. And originally the idea was to give everyone 2 days to write and polish and post it on Friday. Mm-hmm. It has become a contest to see who can post first on Wednesday. But we have participants from all over the world, and hence it's worked out for me in that I've garnered readers for my novels. When I started, I probably had about 40 followers, if that. And right now I have over 3,500 followers.
Wow, that's very good.
Fortunately, they don't all participate every week.
I'm guessing the goal of the Friday Fictioners, other than, you know, getting people to follow you, but it's also to give people practice at writing. It's also an opportunity so they can read other people's work and compare themselves and maybe learn a few things.
Exactly. We have quite I call it a global community. Mm-hmm. And that was the big draw for me, is I've made so many friends. I mean, I Skype with friends in Hawaii and in England and, you know, all over the globe.
Wow.
And we read and critique each other's work. And that's half the fun of it, is that the reciprocation.
You know, it seems to me, correct me if you believe that I'm not correct, definitely correct me, but it seems like writers do this a lot more than other creative type people. You know, they freely give out their stuff and say, here, go ahead and critique it for me. And then they learn to take it back lovingly and say, wow, it's a great idea. I think I'll change that. I haven't seen that in music, and I'm told people in art don't necessarily operate that way on a global scale either. Why do you think writers are more apt to compare and share information, take criticism, make corrections, etc.?
I'm not sure. Okay. Maybe because it is so verbal that, okay. I know for me, critique groups have been instrumental. I've learned so much. Mm-hmm. Although I do have a couple of artists, friends. I have one friend who is in New Mexico. We were high school friends, and I will take pictures of some of my work and send it to her via the phone, you know.
Okay.
And she's picked up on some, you know, some things where I've maybe out of proportion or You know, the perspective is off. So she's my other set of eyes.
Okay.
No, I don't see that as often.
Yeah.
As I do with the writers.
Certainly not a large group like you have with your Friday Fictioneers.
Right.
Yeah. I know about 2 or 3 months ago, this young person, young enough to be my son, although he's not my son, but he could be, wrote a song and wanted me to listen to it. And so I did. And he said, well, what did you think of it? It's like, you know, it's the moment like, well, do I tell him what I really thought of it? Does he really want to know? Or does he just want me to say, that's the greatest thing I ever heard? And it wasn't. And it wasn't, incidentally, it wasn't the greatest thing I ever heard. So I thought, well, I'll start off lightly, and I'll mention a couple of things, and if he seems interested, I'll go deeper, and if not, I'll just back off. And so I mentioned something very small, rather subtle, and he stopped me mid-sentence. He goes, no. He goes, this is my song. He goes, the reason I wrote that, he starts arguing with me, and I thought, well, okay. I guess I got my answer.
You know, you run into that with writers, too.
Yeah, you sure do, yeah.
I mean, I do. They're in Friday Fictioneers. You know, you can almost tell those who really want critique and there are those who do not. And then of course we have a little bit of a language barrier sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
So the writing, you know, one of my mottos sometimes is, if you can't say something nice, be kindly vague.
That's a good way to put it. I like to tell people, if you can't say something nice, I won't be asking you ever again to critique my work. No, I'm just kidding. I don't really say that. On the radio station in Detroit, we used to say, you know, now's the time to call in if you have comments. And if they're positive, we'll take your calls. And if they're not, we probably won't even answer the call. So but that happens a lot. But, you know, the people who learn the most are the ones who are most open to other ideas, or even if it's criticism. That's how you learn, not by people telling you you're perfect all the time.
Yeah, being able to take critique isn't always going, oh, you're absolutely right. Sometimes it's knowing when to say no.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I don't agree with you, but I appreciate your input. And, you know, not everybody is going to love your work or agree with it. I recently got a review on Amazon on Please Say Kaddish for Me, which mostly the reviews have been 5 and 4 stars. And somebody recently just gave it a terrible review.
Different works affect people differently. And you can't expect 100% of the people to love your stuff ever. It's just not going to happen.
No, any more than I love everything I read.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there are some books you pick up and you wish you hadn't picked them up. And there are other books you wish they had written more because you're so enthralled with them. But
exactly. Yeah.
And so I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Dr. Paul's Family Talk on Impact Radio USA. We're talking this morning to Rochelle Wisaw-Fields, an author and artist from Kansas City, Missouri. And on your blog, it's entitled Addicted to Purple. So tell us what this purple addiction is all about, Rochelle.
It kind of started as a bit of humor and just something to get people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought, oh, that's a good title for it. And so I, you know, of course, made the background predominantly purple. But it has become almost a career. I get my fictioneers will write stories about my purple addiction and poke fun at me. It's one of the, you know, one of those brainstorms that I am so grateful for. I've had a lot of fun with it. And I have a pair of purple high-top Converse shoes. I checked.
Now, do they actually make those in the store, or do you have to special order those?
No, I bought them in the store.
You did? Okay. And all right.
I wore out one pair and then found another pair and said, those are mine.
Oh, I think that's great. And, you know, I mean, the addiction to purple aside, anything you can come up with to make people pay attention to you, I think is great. And this happens to be a really good addiction. It's not like you're eating chocolate bars or smoking cigarettes. You're wearing purple.
Right. I have no intention of recovery.
Right. have not sought treatment for it at all, right?
You got it.
That's great. All right, so if people want to get a hold of your books, let's go through all the sites again. Obviously, they can go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, look up Rochelle Wisaw-Fields, or give us your website again.
Okay, Rochelle Wisaw, www.rochellewisaw.com.
Okay.
All one word, or there again, Google Addicted to Purple.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The that'll get you there. And I noticed on your website you have portraits by commission. Is that something you'd like to talk about for a minute? Are you taking commissions now to do portraits?
I am. I haven't gotten any takers yet other than my agent who calls me her one-stop Christmas shop.
Now, how do you do that? I'm looking at your website, it looks like maybe people send actual photographs to you and you do a sketch from there, or do you have them live and in person?
Either way.
Okay.
The easiest, of course, is to send me photos. And with the wonderful world of the internet, mm-hmm. the photos can be sent in the form of JPEGs.
Okay.
So, you know, kind of hanging out my shingle.
It's
kind of a new addition to my blog.
Yeah, very good. How long would it take you to, just on the average, I know it's impossible to answer from person to person, but how long would it take you to do a sketch of somebody? If you got their photo today, when could you give them their sketch?
Depending on the difficulty, probably a good 8 hours.
Oh, that's not bad at all. I was expecting weeks or months, but...
It depends on the difficulty.
We went to one of those amusement parks in Orlando, Florida. I don't know if it's Universal Studios or what it was, but they have these booths set up where artists will do sketches for you on the spot.
We have Worlds of Fun here in Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
and I was a caricature artist out there the first year they opened.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is, caricatures. Yeah, okay. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. And they had kids were little at the time. I think the oldest was maybe 12 and then 9 and 6. And we thought, oh, what the heck? It's probably not going to be great, but let's give it a shot for 25 or 30 bucks, whatever they were charging. And in about 10 minutes, maybe 12, this guy whipped out a photo, a caricature sketch that captured each one of my kids perfectly. So perfectly that we wrote the studio and asked for the guy's name to get permission to print more. And, we had to pay him for it, of course. And now just about everybody in our extended family has this on the wall in their home from years ago. I had
that's
it
nice.
in my office forever, in my home forever, in my home office. And that's all from like 12 minutes of work, several years ago. And it's amazing the impact art can have, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. You're obviously multi-talented. You can write. You can run a blog. You can market. Marketing is important. You're an artist. Is there anything that you cannot do? Oh, you already mentioned you can't play music. Yeah. Well,
and don't ask me about my organizational or housekeeping skills.
So does the housework mostly fall upon your husband then? Is that why you still keep him around?
Well, it's one of the reasons. He is better about it than I am, but neither of us are great shakes.
Well, you have a choice in life. You can spend all of your time cleaning your house, or you can write and do sketches, correct?
There you go. And I retired from a cake decorating and sign making career with a grocery store 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I was told by another writer, you won't know how you ever had time to work.
Yeah, yeah, isn't that the truth?
That is the truth.
Yeah.
I'm busier now than I was then.
Yeah, I believe it, and having a lot more fun doing it, I'll bet.
Oh, infinitely more fun. I'm having the time of my life.
Although I would imagine, even cake decorating or making signs, it's still creative, it's still art, but you're not doing what you want to do, you're doing what you have to do.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been great to talk to you this morning. Obviously, a very talented lady. And highly skilled and creative, and we've enjoyed talking to you. Again, it's been Rochelle.
I've enjoyed it, too. Thank
you. You bet. And it's been Rochelle Wistoff-Fields from Kansas City, Missouri. Check out her blog, which is RochelleWistoff.com, or you can go to Google and type in Addicted to Purple. Is that right?
That's right.
And that'll get you there. And check out her books on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And before we go, could you give everybody the names of those three books that are available right now from your trilogy?
The first one is Please Say Kaddish for Me.
Mm-hmm.
The second is From Silt and Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is As One Must, One Can.
All right, and those are available now. And when you get your coffee table book, your companion book to all those, give us a call and we'll get you back on the air.
I will do that.
All right. Again, been Rochelle Wisoff Field. And Rochelle, we thank you very much, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too.
Mm-hmm. A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people leader sure looks strange to me. Oh, well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I wouldn't eat you because you're so tough. It was a one-eyed, one-horned.